Hello, welcome to The Honest Wargamer. I'm your host, Rob, and it is a Tuesday for me. And Ash, what day is it for you?
Technically still Tuesday for now, yep.
All right, perfect, close enough. I'm being joined by Ash. He'll let you know where he's from in a minute, and we're going to be doing a faction reaction to Nighthorn. I'm very excited to talk to this guy, especially as I saw him win an event last year with what is now a ludicrously overcosted Purple Sun.
I can't believe that they only brought it down halfway. Hey,
just doesn't seem right, does it? I'm really happy to have you on the show. Thank you very much for doing this. You're a gent.
Oh, so, pleasure to be here.
Let's kick it off. I just want to say thank you to everyone on Patreon and Twitch. Obviously, you guys are wonderful, and you helped me be able to do all of this. So Ash, just want to tell us a little bit about yourself before we get started. Who are you? Where you're from? And how long you've been playing Warhammer?
Yeah, for sure. So myself, I've been playing Warhammer for ages. So I think about 16 years. Not the majority of that wasn't competitively, though. So I only really got into the competitive side of Warhammer when Age of Sigmar came out. I'm from Sydney. We meet up with a bunch of the guys from Clan Filth here in Sydney. Clan Filth is kind of a little bit of a nod to the fact that we don't really take the filthy lists, hence Purple Sun. One of my mates plays Four Sharks. So, you know, we've got that sort of fun loving attitude to the game, which is always good.
Very good. The sharks are also cute as hell.
They are actually quite good at 120 points now, I reckon. I reckon that's about where they need to be.
Okay, all right. Well, we could talk about that later, definitely. Sorry, I interrupted you. Carry on.
No, that's all right. Aside from playing Age of Sigmar, I've been playing back and forth on a couple of different games. Since starting Age of Sigmar, pretty much since it started, I was hitting the ground running, playing all the narrative side of it and practicing with some of those scenarios that didn't really make sense. You didn't really have a balanced army. But then moving that through to the General's Handbook, got stuck in with the first CanCon 3 years ago now it was. And that was with my Iron Jaws. And since then I've done an army a year for the last 4 years it is now. So Iron Jaws was the first year, then moving into the second year I did Tzeentch when that came out and was the new hotness, and then this year I've been playing Nighthorn, and the plan is for next year to run the Devoted of Sigmar. So
the Devoted of Sigmar, wow, you really
yeah. I'm jumping on that 40 point Witch Hunter.
A little cheaper, so better. We could possibly include this in the show because it you might be the only person in the
just
world
do a quick summary of Devoted now.
My question is so you played armies for a year, and I don't know if you listened to the show, but that became kind of like my thing, that I decided I was going to try and learn some skill sets and just stick to an army for a year. And I found it really, really impactful to my gaming, and I felt I really got to grips with how to play in that way anyway. Have you found that to be the same for you, or why did you decide to stick with it for a year?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so the main reason for me sticking to an army a year is that I sort of pride myself in being a painter before a gamer, or at least that has been the case up until I've been painting 150 Flood Daunts. But the main thing for me has been to get the army painted to a standard that I'm happy with on the tabletop, and that usually takes between sort of 6 to 9 months. And then playing the army that I've got painted the previous year, for that time, it just sort of fits in nicely with the schedule. And then also that sort of lines up with the Australian match play ranking schedule as well. So we have the Masters here at the end of the year and beginning of December. So each year I'll sort of start a new army for CanCon and then play it until the Masters, and that's sort of the cycle that I play by.
It's a good system, and is the system I'm probably going to stick with, truth be told. And one of the armies you played before Tzeentch is my future pick. Well, it's my current pick.
Yes, I've heard about this.
Yeah, no. But don't worry, it's not very good. So anyone listening, no one needs to stress. It's going to be fine.
Zincha's never been good. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Exactly right. Like, it's hardly ever been an issue. Okay. So do you know if you have a play style?
Play style? That's an interesting question. I listened to your episode with... who was
Vince?
It that I listened to today with Vince? Yeah, and he talked about the three different little people. I can't remember what the names were when he was talking about it, but I think for me, my play style is I like to play different play styles, if that makes sense. So I'll generally, the next army that I choose will be something that's completely different to anything I've done before. So for instance, starting with Iron Jaws, it's all combat. Then I was like, all right, I need to play these other two, three phases of the game, however many more there are, so let's try and get some shooting and magic in there. So I went with Zinch. That sort of then naturally flowed on into Nighthaunt, where it was kind of that skirmishing style, which was similar to Zinch, the way I played it, but with a bit more of a focus on the bigger units and sort of the skirmishing, bouncing around, hit-and-run style. And then this next year is going to be trying out the full-on Horde with the devoted 150 models and seeing if I can finish any games.
but quickly before we get on to Nighthorn and ask you about your experiences, very quickly, just a TLDR, how do you think Devoted Sigmar will do as they currently stand in this General's Handbook?
How do I think they'll do as they stand currently? Under the tutelage of a experienced general of 4 years, I'm hoping 3-2. But that's because my mate Simon over there in the UK has won 2 and 3 so far. So if I can beat that, that'd be great.
Yeah, absolutely. A big shout out to Simon. We'll get him on to see if he disagrees. Exactly, all day long. All right. So your experience, obviously, you've been playing Nighthorn for the past year. What's your experience with them? And then also, how do you think they play? Because you've won some stuff with them, right?
Yeah, so I've taken my Nighthaunt to events since CanCon this year. I played a couple of 1,000-point events last year, which obviously don't count. moving
I'm sure
into,
some people think they do.
Maybe in this handbook, maybe. moving into the proper 2,000-point match play, I've played it since CanCon. So CanCon, I came 14th out of, 196 players, which was quite the achievement, going 5-1.
That last General's Handbook's biggest event.
Yeah, yeah. Less crazy to think about the last General's Handbook. It still feels like it's just now. But that one. Yeah. And then moving on from there, played at a couple of local events, which were one days, but getting loads of practice in with it through that. And learning really the play style of the army, and then took it to the Anzac Cup back in, I want to say April or maybe May. That makes sense. So I ended up pulling out the 5-0 for that one and pulled out the victory. So, sort of got a bit of understanding of how the army plays and a couple of the tricks and techniques that you can play around with it. And it's not what people usually think with death.
That's interesting. So how does the army play?
Yeah, so it's a little bit odd because people see the horde bonuses, particularly things like Grimghast Reapers and even Bladeguyst Revenants, looking at, like, God forbid, Dreadscythe Harridans. They look at that and they'll see that bonus and be like, oh, maybe I just take the full unit. But the trick to the army is trying to maximize the allegiance ability. And I think that's key to playing any army well, is trying to look at what the allegiance ability does, see what you can do with that and how you need to adapt the army that you take, the army list that you take to take the most advantage of that. So for Nighthaunt, the biggest, I think, my opinion, the biggest allegiance ability they have is the Wave of Death, on a 10+ to charge, you get to attack straight away. So that jumps around the activation wars and can cause all sorts of hurt. And the way to really take advantage of that is have as many units charging as you can to give you as many possible chances of getting those 10+ charges out. So I run mid-sized units, like fives of Blade Geist Revenants, tens of Chain Rasps. And yeah, just every time there's a unit within range to charge, I'll roll the dice. And if it's a 10, chances are I'll be throwing it in, even if it's a hero, a support hero, whatever it is, because it gets the job done.
Yeah, do you ever, I know it's going to sound really silly, but do you ever not charge? Because, like, you know, if you're in the second half of a turn and then you got the priority roll coming up and you think, well, actually, because even though you roll a charge, you don't have to actually, like, complete the charge, right? That's not how it works. Do you ever end up just, like, going, or do you know what, I'll wait, let's see if I get the priority and then give it another go? Or do you always go in if it's, like, a 9 or something?
Depends on the unit. So obviously if I'm looking at charging the Briar Queen into some kind of horrific combat unit, unless I roll a 10, she's probably going to stay where she is. If I'm looking at a unit of 5 Blade Geists and they roll a 9 and that can still get them in range of the Chain Gust for the rerolls to hit, that can still do a load of hurt into the enemy unit. And even worst comes to worst, can pin them in the side of their flank, so that if I then fail that priority roll, I've got the opportunity to hold them up anyway.
Okay, that's a really good point. I had not thought about doing that at all. And what you said about making use of the allegiance ability makes total sense. Scary for me. Like, I kind of, you know, I guess everyone does, like you said, they see the big unit and they go, wow, I hope I roll a 10 on the big unit. And yeah, now that unit's fighting twice. But, you know, it makes lots of sense. So it works MSU style, is what you're saying, basically.
It does, yeah, to use the old added to the MSU, the multiple small units.
Yeah, so I said it all the way through just for the new people in the room. Yeah, multiple small units. Okay, and that's always scared me as a playstyle as well. moving on to the General's Handbook, how do you think, the points have obviously changed significantly, and also obviously got the Legion of Grief as well.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
So would you like, this is all you now, how do you feel about it all? Let's go through the units individually, all your thoughts.
So I guess to start out with, I'd like to say that Legion of Grief is actually a filthy Legion of Nagash allegiance, and I won't be talking about it here because, you know, that's not my Nighthorn.
Good.
Seriously, though, if you want to do well and have an easier game, that's the one to do. Anyway, so with Nighthorn allegiance, I've got my photographic memory in front of me here with the points. Perfect. Looking at some of the changes that we've had, so pretty much everyone in Nighthorn was a winner. All of the units that you would want to take in the Nighthorn allegiance, not in the Legions and the Gash allegiance, got a little bit of a discount. And the reason I say that is because Grimghast Reapers actually aren't that amazing in Nighthorn, because they are that big footprint. They're a big unit, they're a big target, and they can get tagged on an end, and they sometimes do struggle to bring down, especially if they get hit by a single model. Like, I've had games like in the mirror match where I've charged my single black coach into a unit of 30 Grimghast Reapers and held them up for 3 turns just because they can't hit him. Yeah, the rest of the...
Yeah, I was never scared of the unit of Grimghast Reapers, because I make him -1 to hit and then throw a single model into him. Yep. And he's basically indestructible at that point.
Exactly. so sort of working the way through the list of points. So Dreadblade Harrow, God knows why he's come down 10 points, but thank goodness for it, because he's in every single list I write. He's just so powerful, being the general with that teleport ability and then using the Nighthorn command ability to bring another unit next to him. That just makes your army so flexible. So thanks, G-Dub, that was a good one. Moving down to the Knight of Shrouds. So we've got the two different Knights of Shrouds, one on the Steed. Both of those came down 20 points. Again, great buff pieces. It kind of makes sense when you look at the Vampire Lord at 140. People were often taking him as the ally, and this just makes the Knight of Shrouds on Ethereal Steed, who essentially has the same abilities, but they're slightly toned down a little bit. It makes him a bit more of an appealing choice for the Nighthorn Allegiance, giving you the extra 6 up saves for being wholly within 12 of him and stuff like that. All of the 3 big heroes came down in points. So we had Curdos come down 20 points, Lady Linda come down 20 points, and Ragnar come down 10. So I hadn't previously had any lists with Curdos in there, but now that he's at 200, I think he's at that sweet spot where you can kind of fit him in where you previously had to take a smaller hero, especially with all the other units coming down in points a little bit as well. Lady Linda's always been solid, but people have said a little bit too expensive for the amount of resilience she has. And I see that. So like if someone gets a hold of her, she'll die, but that's the trick. You just don't let them get her. Put something else like 10 chain rasps in the way, or 10 chain rasps and 5 blade geists and 10 grim ghasts, and they're all minimum size units, so it'll take them 3 turns to get to her. So yeah, that's the way.
Oh, that makes sense. Can I ask a question?
Yeah, man.
Can I ask a question about Curdos before we go any further?
Go for it.
So obviously the other update that we've seen in this General's Handbook is the ability to not start with more than one command point generated by being underpointed in your army. So if anyone's not aware what that means, for every 50 points you didn't pay in your army list, you effectively could get a command point. You can only do that one time now.
Yeah.
So you can only start the game with one command point unless you do some battalions, which you get a command point for each one of those as well. So there's effectively, for armies that were command point hungry, there's a CP economy now, which always should have been in effect. But now that it's there, do you think that Curdos has got more value for his ability to just shut armies down, or do you not think?
Yeah, definitely. So not only for his ability to shut armies down, but Nighthorn can be quite command point heavy as well. So it's good to have those extra ones coming through with his ability. So I wrote a list today that included him and the Aether Quartz Bridge just to get as many of those command points off my opponent and then keep them in my side for as long as I could. Because I think that's a really valuable tool in the arsenal.
Yeah, it's I think there's some room there. And while 200 points is a lot for the chance to steal a command point, we always pay points for the chance to do a thing, right?
Yeah.
And on a 5-up, shutting down someone's game plan for that turn is just huge. And then also giving yourself that bonus. I don't know. It seems like something I'd want to put.
What I'd also say is that he's about 160 to 180 points of combat character anyway, depending on what you're comparing him to, I guess, obviously. But from my perspective, like looking at something like a mega boss, which is what, 140, he can easily match a mega boss in combat and probably will come out on top at the end of the day. So I think when you look at it that way, you're paying what, 40 to 60 points for the ability to potentially take a command point off your opponent, and that is a 100 point swing when you look at it like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, all right. I just wanted to touch on that. And then you protect Alinda by just letting no one charge her. That's the plan.
That's the trick. Let them end up within 6 inches of her so she can pop her 2d6 mortal wounds on them. But otherwise, keep them away.
All right, sweet. And then Raikkonor. How do you feel about him?
Raikkonor was in my list for his casting ability. So there's one spell in the Nighthorn Allegiance that in these days we really need to get off pretty much every turn that we're able to make it an effective army, and this kind of plays in with that multiple small unit style as well. So that's the Soul Cage spell, so forcing your opponent to fight at the end of the combat phase. So when you combine that with the multiple small units, you can effectively get a large unit's worth of combat out of all of your small units before they get to fight. So using him to make sure that spell goes off on a 5 if he hits an enemy unit with the plus 1 to cast, or if he hits himself to make sure it happens on a 3, I think it comes down to. So, it makes him really, really reliable to get that one off.
Good. All right, sweet.
So the other thing I used to use him for was, of course, for getting that purple sun on the board, which it just scares the bejesus out of people. And we'll definitely be seeing more of those on the table these days as well. So I'm looking forward to seeing some more of those.
So you're one of the only people to run. You're one of the only people to run that that I saw anyway, at least with some success. At like, speak to us about how you would use Purple Sun for people who are picking it up now and using.
Okay, so people that come from sort of the 40k side will know the term distraction card effects. a lot of Age of Sigmar people will think of things like the Star Drake that sits in the middle of the board and just says, you're not taking me off the table. The Pebble Sun does that, but he's also got a effective 18-inch bubble around him that your opponent is going to try and avoid with anything that they're really concerned about losing. So that's heroes, because just that chance of rolling a six to pop one off can be game-changing. And it's also like those big units of things like Blood Sisters, anything with two wounds or three wounds. Evocators hate this guy so much. Yeah, there's a lot of good targets for him out there in the competitive scene at the moment. And I think the way to play him is throw him in the middle when you're up against the chance at a double and just hope that he doesn't kill your guys when he comes back.
Yeah, I think it really does depend on what army you're running and whether or not you think there's a cost benefit for it, whether or not he returns to your own lines. But I've said this quite often about Purple Sun, Endless Spells generally, especially Geminids. People would always be like, oh yeah, but it's going to hit you. And I'm like, why are you near it? Like maybe like three turns down the line, you can't predict it and it's going to go badly. But the first couple of turns, you can be in a place where you want to be, I guess. Well, that's how I feel anyway.
For sure.
Yeah, yeah. But then after priority rolls and two turns, if stuff's still on the board, we're all in danger at that stage. It does get out of hand, I understand. But...
And then things like the objective becomes the bait there and you have to go forwards and stand next to your Purple Sun anyway. So, yeah, it gets a bit concerning. But then that's why as well, I guess the multiple small units, you don't feel the effect as much because you may be rolling five dice for a unit of Blade Geists or maximum 10 dice for a unit of Chain Rasps. And you, even if you lose one or two, you've got some healing there to bring them back. So you're not too concerned about that. It's just really, you really don't want it to hit Olinda or Reikonor himself because that hurts.
It really hurts. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No, I agree. Yeah. But you want it to hit all of their characters. That's what you want. And like you said, it creates a threat range. Yes. It does create a threat range that people are just like, oh no, what am I going to do? That's a good point, actually. All right. I'm looking forward to using anyway. 50 points of madness running around on the tabletop.
Yeah.
What else is sweet inside that book?
All right. So moving down the list, the Black Coach is the next one. Now, I would probably argue that he's probably still about 20 points too expensive, but he's another great distraction kind of effects. And the other thing that he does is moves super quickly and can pin a shooting unit in combat. Really effectively. So if you combine this guy's movement, which is 14, with the Pendant of the Fellwind for +3, so that's movement 17. If he gets two upgrades, he can run and charge. So you can make that 23-inch movement and then a charge. And I find that this guy's great for hunting units of five Judicators, units of Heart Renders or other Harpies once they're on the table. Anything that's a 5-man to 10-man unit, he'll generally come out on top in that combat.
Yeah, that's amazing. Okay, all right, I see what you're saying. Good. Yeah, very good.
He's also good for bringing some models back into the units nearby him, so that's another useful tool, and people underestimate him because they've heard that he's not very good, so they don't expect it.
I really like the pendant. I like the pendant as an item. That's sweet.
I think it's the most powerful item in the book. I think adding some movement on the whole army is so powerful.
It's what we said in our review, and I've yet to see it used apart from by you. So good, solid choice.
I keep telling people to do it, and I just keep telling them. I'll tell them every day.
Go on, after you.
All right, so so that's the Black Coach. Something I'd pull out here as well is some of the units that didn't have any point changes are actually winners in this handbook as well. So the units of Bladegeist Revenants, I think, are a big winner in this handbook because I think they're at least, their damage output is at least 100 points worth. And the fact that they can retreat and charge, the fact that they get the rerolls to hit when they're nearby to a Spirit Torment or the units of Chain Ghasts, they're just so good. So them staying at 90 points is a big deal as well. I was expecting them to go up a little bit. Moving on to the Chain Ghasts. These guys can go 10 points, which is
sorry,
great.
Can I just say that I think the retreat and charge is just unreal. Like, that's going to save your bacon in so many places in a game. Yeah.
so many times.
we've got a teeny bit of a delay between the pair of us, I'm pretty certain.
Sorry, I've got the Canon string pulled out as tight as I can, but it's just not quite reaching far enough to make it over your head in the world.
Don't worry, we were both then like, who's gonna talk? There we go. That's after you, good sir, you let me know what's up next.
All right, so yeah, so Chaincasts come down 10 points. They're a great pick. So they pair in really well with the Blaygeist Revenants. And even on their own, if they get a 10-plus charge in, they have the potential to really mince a horde of models or to mince a hero that's standing next to a horde of models. So they're a great pick. Dreadscythe Harridans came down 10 points as well. Those guys you didn't really see very much, but I think they're a winner out of this handbook as well. You'll see them in their formation showing up here and there. One of my mates, Deke, here in the Sydney scene has been playing those guys. He played them at the most recent tournament I went to. I think he ended up with 3-2. So, with some success there. So with them getting cheaper, he's only going to be able to fit more stuff in alongside that to buff that army as well. One of the losers out of the one loser, I would say, in this army out of the new handbook would be the Glaive Wraith Stalkers. God bless them. They just didn't get anything, did they? They're 60 points for 4. They still can only go to a max size 16. They're just hot garbage. They don't do very much. They have the retreat and charge, but they're not battle lines, so they're competing too much with the Blaygeist Revenants for that ability, and they just don't do the job as well.
And a lot of what's inside the Nighthorn book is a bit like an Iron Jaws or a Carriage and Overlords conversation. They all do some. They're a combat army almost across the board. And so when you just like, which is the combat I want to choose, it really does start to narrow down, right?
Absolutely, yeah, for sure. The obvious one, Grimghast Reapers. They've gone up 20 points. That doesn't faze me too much. I had 10 of them in my list before. I think I'll keep 10 of them in my list, and I still end up with 110 points extra thanks to all the other drops. So, I'm not too concerned about that rising points. It's going to hurt the Legions of Nagash and Legion of Grief players. Screw those guys even more than the Nihil players. So, they've just abandoned us, haven't they, those Legion of Grief players?
They have. And arguably rightly so.
But absolutely.
At the same, yeah. Just loads better.
What I would is their stats. Their stats should go in with the Legions of Nagash players just to really rub it in that they're not Nighthorn anymore.
Oh no, they're just going to be absolved into Legions of Nagash. They're a Legions of Nagash army. It's just a different temple, right? Like,
yeah, exactly.
That was just the biggest complaint you ever heard from Legions of Nagash players. Yeah, they're like, oh, why aren't we seeing the different legions? And I'm like, it's the same. It's like, just because you've got a different general, you've still got 30 Grimghast Reapers in there. Yeah, change my mind, bro. And no one can change my mind. Yeah.
Exactly. The only one that feels a little bit different in Legions of Nagash is the Legion of Blood, and that's because for some reason they love their Blood Knights.
They want to be weird. Yeah, no, I like the Legion of Blood players are definitely okay. Yeah, they're okay.
Yeah. So Grimghast Reapers have effectively been replaced now in my lists with Hex Wraiths. So they've gone down to 140 from 160. They've got that same reaped like corn ability that the Grimghast Reapers have. They have obviously 5 less attacks because there's less guys in the unit, but they've also then got the hooves attacks, which sort of make up for some of that. And the Hex Wraiths are much faster. And they go into the formation that is the winner out of these points changes, which is the
which is
the Death Riders Battalion.
Yeah, really, the Death Riders is solid. And actually, interesting note is both me and Tom from Warhammer Weekly were having an entire Death Riders conversation during the middle of one of our doubles games. At Adepticon. So yeah, I'm a huge fan. Do you want to tell us what it does?
Yeah, so the Death Riders Battalion is made up of two units of Hex Wraiths, one of the Dreadblade Harrows and the Black Coach. So that formation, for its points itself, it didn't get a reduction, but your minimum size battalion is now 70 points cheaper, which is insane. So that's a big deal. And essentially what it means is you can fit it in as well as another formation. So I've got it and a Shroud Guard in a list, which I think is going to do wonders. But yeah, the formation itself, what it does is it changes that 10 plus charge where you do the automatic activation, goes into a 9 plus charge and you get plus 1 to charge. So you're getting that extra activation off an extra 1 in 3 times, which is, I guess that's not quite maths, but never mind. That's close enough. Essentially,
it does seem close enough. Yeah, I'll take that.
Yeah, so you get it off a lot more because you've got more chances of rolling nines, obviously, than tens, and there's maths there that someone will do. But I think it's good.
I agree. I think it's pretty solid, especially as like as you said. I guess it's a bonus, right?
Yeah.
Like it's whether or not you think it's necessary to win the game. I think it's really, really, really good, especially as you can really double up on things like Hex Wraiths and how many attacks they have, and then make them pile in attack twice. You can do a bunch of interesting things.
Take them with the Knight of Shrouds on Ethereal Steed to give them 6 attacks each, and they go crazy.
Yeah, they do. And then carry on after you. I just got excited then.
That's okay. I'm excited about Hex Wraiths now as well. That's okay. Even though the models are slightly older, they still hold up, I think, and they fit in with the Nighthaunt range well. So I might be painting up some of them for the next army I make. I guess the last unit that we've seen with a points change is the Mermon Banshees. So they're still 4 to 12, so same unit sizes there, but they've just come down 10 points and they've lost their horde bonus. So instead of being 80 points for 4 and then 210 for 12, they're just 70 points for 4. So it's still 210 for 12, but it just makes a bit more sense going those smaller units now, which is how I would like to play them if I do them. I think getting more unbinds at an extra plus 1 to unbind is better than having one unbind at plus 3 to unbind. It's just my opinion.
It makes sense, especially like for board space. Like I traditionally ran 2 wizards in my Legion of Asgore, and I didn't have any bonuses or anything. But actually, where they went on the board for both casting and unbinding was actually quite impactful. And then. That in the kind of deployment game that you play with your opponent, and then you have to factor in the fact that you know you've got to be near objectives and do things with them as well. So having more options or a wider spread of the ability to just roll a couple of dice and give it a try is quite big. So I can see the argument for that completely.
Yeah, for sure. So that's all the units. We do have two more things that have come down in points. So we've seen the Shaiish Reaper come down to 20 points and the Vault of Souls come down to 20 points. Now I know that the Vault of Souls is your pick, right? So this is, I think it's great as well. I thought it was okay at 40. I almost fit it into a few lists, but I hated the model so much that it never made it. But now that it's 20 points, it's going to make it into a few lists. It's really good.
It definitely. It Speckles who brought it up, so I want to make sure I give credit where credit's due. As much as he's terrible at Warhammer,
don't give credit to Speckles.
I know, I got to, but also he then told me it also moved after you set it up, which you don't set it up. You know, it doesn't move after, which Nathan pointed out. So credit to Nathan in sorting Speckles out there.
that's just credit to reading the rules correctly, isn't it?
Yeah, it's credit to reading the rules. Yeah, but it still seems very good against horde armies, especially in a world of Skaven. It does seem like it can do a lot of damage.
Yeah, I think even it's actually better against a horde that has valuable heroes. So something like Skaven, where you can sort of rack up those 20 points quickly and then get the d6 mortal wounds onto all the heroes that are standing near them. That's where the value really comes in.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what he was saying. The D6, doing the D6 mortal wounds. Do you rate the Sheesh Reaper or not bother?
No, I don't rate the Sheesh Reaper. No, it's not good. It struggles to make it over any models, let alone multiple models to do mortal wounds on maximum of 4+, because that's the best save you'll see. So, no, it's not great. I think 10 points, it still wouldn't make it into a list.
A 10-point endless spell. No, I still won't take that. That sucks. That's when you really know it needs a change up.
You know what? I would... A 10-point endless spell, I would take the one that unbinds. What's that one called?
Maelstrom.
I've forgotten the name of it now. Maelstrom. Yeah, Maelstrom. That one's 10 points now. So I would take that over this every day. Yeah, no, it's terrible. It's not good. But yeah, so that's all the points updates. So that's a quick summary of the new book.
So how do you think the army is going to play in this version of the General's Handbook, and then how do you think it's going to do?
I think it's going to play very similarly to how I've been playing it. It's going to play multiple small units. It's going to be skirmishing. You're going to want to take the Dreadblade Harrows, your general, to bounce around with that command ability and impact as many parts on the board as you can. The other thing with having multiple small units is you can set up half your units in the Underworld. So I'll often have my Chain Rasps and my Thorns of the Briar Queen and a couple of the wizard heroes on the table, which allows me to put all of the damage dealers in the Underworld. And that just means you can pick apart the back lines of your opponent when they inevitably leave too much space, which they didn't think that anything would fit in. But you can always fit in a Dreadblade, and you can generally fit in the Chain Ghasts. And often, sometimes, they'll leave space for the units of Blade Ghasts as well. I think that's the way it's going to play, is very similar to that. But I guess the only thing that you're going to see differently in the new handbook is... with the way that the new scenarios are, I think that's going to change up how we need to play it, because the scenarios that I've seen, a lot of the objectives are a lot further spread apart. So you're going to need to be able to, jump around the edges of the battlefield, but there are a lot as well that have a big focus on the center of the battlefield. So I think it may be useful to have something like the black coach is a distraction piece to hold your opponent up, so you can take the middle of the table and then create those layers of screens like you would in a Tzeentch Force with your horrors to make it difficult for your opponent to get to where they need to be in the late game.
If I've got any thoughts on it realistically, that's why I always use my Kadai as, like, they genuinely could do the combat sometimes that I wanted them to do. But truth is, a lot of people would just charge them because they were the big thing there. So the Black Coach could be used. The problem is we've universally all been cussing the Black Coach since it came out. So maybe people won't fall for it. but maybe they will.
You would think that, but they do. They do every time.
Do they?
Even the more experienced players will realize it poses a threat to some of their units. Not their big units and not their strong units, but the units that they usually leave on an objective, it's going to go and hunt them all day. And if they don't deal with it, they're going to struggle. I played against one of the guys from New Zealand, Big Sean, with his Aether Strike Force, with his 9 Raptors, and he double shot those Raptors into the coach turn 1 because he did not want it hitting his units of Aether Wings and things like that that were gonna cause issues for me later on. So there's a lot of people that will take that bait as much as they really really shouldn't, but also maybe they should.
Oh yeah, there we go, leave it on a final. Maybe you should. Okay, well, I think that's good. I think there's a lot to learn there and take away. I think it's always felt like a very knife edge army that's been in a tough and interesting spot, especially when you compare it to Legions of Nagash and Legions of Grief. But there's some hope there for pure Night Hauntists, purists, pure ghostists. I think is the way to describe it. That's good. Thank you very much for being on the show. I hugely appreciate it.
That's my pleasure.
You're excellent, and you guys should check Ash out. We can find you on Twitter, is that right, Ash?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Ash_McEwen. That's terribly difficult to spell, but MCEW.
It's okay. I'm going to include it. I'll include it in all the notes that we have going up.
So you can find me in the show notes. That's where you can find me on socials.
That'll be the easy way to do it. Thank you to everyone on Patreon and Twitch. You guys have been wicked. If you've got any thoughts or feelings, obviously let me or Ash know about how you feel about Nighthorn. I'm sure there's lots to say about Legions of Grief, but we don't care about those guys at all. Just another Legion of Nagash wannabe. No.
They're basically as bad as Manfred.
And watch out for Ash winning tournaments with Devoted of Sigmar this year. It's going on.
Coming to Sydney GT 2019. I'm coming with 2,500 points of Devoted, baby.
Oh, baby. You're Devoted. That's what you are. So, Ash, thanks very much. I really appreciate it. Thank you to everyone. Thank you for everyone for listening. I hope you guys have a great day, and we'll see you guys soon.